Hi, and welcome to another episode of Extra Time, a weekly conversation with the national newspaper staff writers and editors on UAE and international sports. It is Thursday, April the 24th. I'm Chitrabhanu Kadlail for the national.ee. The UAE rugby union team were beaten by Singapore in Dubai last night. They lost the game 30-13, which means they've been relegated to Division 2 of the Asian Five Nations competition. At first blush, the result looks depressing. It reads depressing to rugby fans in the country, but there is apparently a silver lining on the horizon. And to find out why, I'm joined by Paul Radley, who's a national sports reporter based in Dubai. Welcome back to the show, Paul.
Thanks, CB.
So first things first, give us a little background of the Asian Five Nations, and that as well as the UAE's record in the competition.
Well, the Asian Five Nations has been going since, I think, 2008, as far as I can recall. And it's actually having a revamp next year because there's a lot of flaws in the competition. They invented this competition, the Asian Rugby Union, with five teams at the top, obviously hence it's called the Asian Five Nations, and then a big sort of structure that feeds into that, and it hasn't been hugely successful because there's a major disparity between the resources and the general standard of play between the sides at the top, Japan, who are on their own, the sort of only real rugby superpower on the continent, then the next two teams, Korea and Hong Kong. Hong Kong really developed over recent years, sort of also in a second tier of their own. Right. And then the next sort of set of nations down, which includes Sri Lanka, Philippines, it was the UAE this time last year, Kazakhstan, nations like that, sort of further down the pecking order from there still. So there's a lot of flaws in it. Competition is restructuring next year so that they can try and iron out the flaws and make the competitive sides have more matches against each other, and the other nations sort of have basically more enjoyable matches and have a chance to develop their games in a more forgiving sort of climate, if you will. And the UAE will certainly hope to benefit from that because they've had a real rough couple of years. They haven't actually won a test match in 2 years since 2012. Last night, because they lost a one-off game against Singapore last night, they've been relegated again. That's two successive relegations. They've lost nine test matches on the run, and basically that can't be much fun at all for the players that are playing in it. The UAE are also trying to put in place a development program at the same time, so obviously that will have a knock-on effect to the standard of the national team, and it's not easy to do at that high level. So the UAE have been tumbling down the rankings, and it's had a real effect on morale.
Right, but mind you, the it was called the Arabian Gulf team before, right? It was some sort of a composite of players from the different regions in the Arabian Gulf, and then UAE is just a very brand new team, really, isn't it?
Well, yeah, at the end of 2010, the Arabian Gulf team was disbanded because it's sort of an anomaly within the IRB. There's no collective sort of state side, collective nations team anywhere else in the IRB rankings. And also, for political reasons at the time, they wanted four, five, whatever it is, six extra nations that they could say were playing rugby, because they were trying to get sevens into the Olympics, so they could say, oh, all these nations play rugby, and every little helped at the time. So there are a variety of factors that rightly led to the Arabian Gulf Union being disbanded, and it hasn't worked particularly well in the UAE's favour as yet. But then, having said that, Qatar have done quite well, from starting down at a lower point in the rankings. And in actual fact, the UAE should be playing, I think, if I've read the competition structure right, for next year, the UAE should actually be playing Qatar this time next year, which will be interesting to see, because the playing resources in this country are vastly superior to Qatar, where there's only one significant team that play, club that is. And this country's got loads of very, very good and thriving club teams, yet it hasn't translated into the standard of the national team. So it'll be very interesting to see next year those two teams playing against each other.
Right. In the run-up to last night's game against Singapore, there was a lot of talk that, you know, UAE were going to field a new-look side. They were going to bring in younger players as well as some indigenous talent. Why was a revamp being done at this stage?
Because... Well, they got relegated from the top flight last year, so they thought this would be a bit more of a manageable time to do it. It didn't prove that way. They had three Emirati players on the field at the start of the game. Mm-hmm. Cyrus Homayoun at the back, who's played a lot of rugby for the UAE. Adwa Hendy played on the wing. He's only 18-year-old. A teenage debutant winger, was really courageous on defence. He's absolutely excellent. Really made his selection for the team justified, which is excellent. And then Mahanid Shaka also played. He's another guy like Cyrus Homayoun, who's played a lot of rugby and he's quite well established. So just to get those guys into the team was quite a valuable exercise, I'd have thought. And the fact that they showed up quite well would have gone down well, and give sort of a reason to be optimistic about the transition process in the future.
Right. As far as the game itself is concerned, it was obviously Singapore were the better side, right? I mean, you've reported that they were fitter, they were more skillful. Was there a chance at some stage in the game that you might actually win the game?
Definitely. Yeah. In fact, that's what the coach, Roelof Kotze, touched on afterwards. He said, basically, this team, the UAE team, which he hasn't had a great deal to do with, obviously, he's quite a recent appointment himself, have lost. They basically just lost the habit of winning. They just don't know how to, because morale has been suffered so badly over the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. They just don't know how to win a game. So when they actually got ahead at one point in the first half, they were 10-7 up, thanks to two tries. And they were a little bit unlucky. That they didn't also have a conversion by Charlie Sargeant. There was a bit of a problem over that, and the UAE came off badly on a sort of decision by the referee that probably went against them. They could have been 12-7 up then, and the morale would have been up then. Virtually immediately, two sort of mistakes by the UAE, but things that really worked in terms of lucky bounces in Singapore's favour. They were suddenly two tries behind again, and then basically morale was just totally gone then. And then, to be fair, Singapore did look like a better drilled, fitter team who probably would have brought that sort of extra experience and extra fitness to bear anyway. But UAE should have been more in the game at that point when they were ahead. But a few things conspired against them, so it was a shame, because they were definitely more competitive than they certainly were last year in any match.
Right. You mentioned in one of your earlier stories that Kotze was vastly experienced in rebuilding sides. What does the CV look like?
Yeah, well, basically he worked for the Sharks Academy in South Africa, where he's had a lot of experience over the years. Obviously, it's been very well documented that South Africa have had like either a quota system or a target system where they've wanted to bring, obviously it was always a few years ago, was the sport of the white people, and obviously they've wanted to have transitioned to a more incorporating and inclusive, to become a more inclusive sport where black players can excel and be given the opportunity to. So there are certain quotas and targets in teams of the number of sort of black players that were needed to be playing in each of the teams, and Roelof Kotze had a lot of experience in that, and developing players from all walks of life to try and get up to the same standard as privileged players, basically. And he obviously, that is something that is in different circumstances and in different communities, in a different social economic makeup over here. He's got to try and do the same in terms of bringing young Emirati players who haven't had the chances to play rugby and haven't been exposed to it in the past, to try and bring them up to a standard where they can say that they're worthy of representing the national team, which has been wholly expatriate dominated until now, really.
What's next for the UAE, Paul? What's on their agenda? What do they play next?
That's a very good question. That's been the whole problem this year. They've only had one test match, because of the restructuring of the Asian sort of competition structure, and they don't necessarily know what's going to be next on the agenda. It could well be that the next test match they play, or the next sort of collaboration they have at all will be this time next year. And if that does happen, then that's a major problem, because if they're really wanting to forward the 15s program, then they have to be together more often than once every April, May, every year.
Is it a question of finding sponsorship, and is it that difficult for teams of UAE's level to pull them together and maybe play a few matches for practice? I mean,
definitely, especially because they'll be playing Qatar next year. You'd have thought they could get their heads together and arrange more stuff in that regard. I think the UAE's problem, they do well for sponsorship, certainly through Emirates. A problem, the revamp of the Asian competition structure has come about because HSBC have pulled out of their very, very good sponsorship that they had of the game in Asia, and that's caused a few problems in terms of the wider collective. But UAE does well for sponsorship, and but I think a lot of their focus from in terms of the resources that the governing body do have here will be related to the Sevens program, because that's entirely Emirati, entirely UAE passport holders, because they'll be playing in Korea in the Sevens competition at the Asian Games later this year. I think it's in September. So a lot of the focus, a lot of Rolf Kutzer's focus and just the general focus of any coaching sort of resources they have will be spent on the Emirati players who they want to prepare for that.
Final question, Paul. From watching the game last night, the quality, the standard of playing, as well as the popularity of it, in terms of the turnout of people, at the ground, what's your assessment of where UAE rugby will be? Maybe 5 years from now, 10 years from now. I mean, what's your prediction? What's your projection?
Well, it's so difficult to say, because basically, if they had the same players that they had involved this time last year or this time 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Who are still here, a lot of them. One that immediately springs to mind is Imad Real. He's been an outstanding player in the domestic season. He won the 3 trophies with Jebel Ali Dragons. He's the best attacking rugby player in this country. Mm-hmm. He is available to play for, has to play for the UAE. He can't play for any other country, even though he's Sri Lankan, even though he's looking to go abroad to Australia to study. He can't play for any other country other than the UAE, because he's played for them in the past. Mm-hmm. So why he's not empowered and encouraged and coaxed and coerced into making himself available to play for the team, I don't know. If you added players like him, another guy, Murray Strang, who's struggled with injuries, but he's still one of the standout players, if not the standout back in the domestic game. He's available to play for the UAE, eligible, I mean. The Abu Dhabi Harlequins captain, Billy Graham, is another that springs to mind. Outstanding flanker. If you could encourage and coax these guys to become involved, and Rolf Kutzer is only new to the region here, new to the UAE, so he doesn't know these guys necessarily by name. He needs some encouragement, and the players themselves need to take it on themselves to think, you know, we can represent a country at international level here. Why let another year tick by where, because it looks like it might not be great fun, why they'd want to avoid it, it just seems, it's frustrating more than anything that there's a lot of really talented players out there in the domestic game who are eligible to play, yet aren't there playing, because the standard of the team, if there was that much more competition for places, they really could be a force, and they could go back up the divisions next year. But you don't know what the team's going to look like in 12 months' time. There might be another new look team with another 12 players in the squad who are going to get their first caps, and that won't be furthering the cause at all if that is the case.
Well, I guess some of these questions will be answered, I think, mostly through your reports over the next few weeks and months. I'm definitely looking forward to reading them and finding out which direction UAE rugby is taking. But I guess we'll have to leave it here for now. Paul Radley, thanks so much for coming on the show. Paul's a sports reporter for the National Newspaper. He's based in Dubai. This episode was edited by Deepthi Unnikrishnan and produced by the National's Multimedia Desk. You can follow our sports coverage on Twitter at SPRT National UAE and our multimedia coverage at NSV UAE. Extra Times podcasts are available on iTunes. You can download them free of charge. I'm Chitra Bhanu Kadlai.